Haïti, c'est belle la mer, c'est belle montagne avec belle rivière, c'est belle plage à picocoyer, bel paysage avec belle couleur. Haïti, c'est sans café, qu'à monter dans même les matins, c'est sans la rouge qui fait poser, pour flaiser qu'à bourgeonner. Haïti, c'est bassin blé, cascade pichon avec sodo. C'est Acadien, la citadelle, c'est la bâtie à Marigot. Haïti, c'est la vallée, c'est Port Sali avec Zabrico. C'est Mon La Selle, Pic Macaya, c'est Mamlad avec Mon Bilbao. Haïti, son douce macos, c'est un point pistache grillé. Son gicolé qui poube en force, son bouteille cola bien glacée. Haïti, son bon brio, son bon fritaille, son bon tasso, son bon légume avec sirop, son bon diri avec la l'eau. Haïti, son bon bouillon, son soujou bon avec piment, son bon cassave avec mamba, quatre pieds dans la casse. Haïti, son bon dombwe, ka mariné, non bon sauce pois, son bois cochon, un bon clair. Haïti, son bon café d'histoire. Haïti, j'ai
jamais. Oh, wonderful, wonderful. That's Michael Mika Benjamin with Haïti Se, meaning Haiti is. It's a love poem, very much acclaimed to his homeland, Haiti, and it was recorded in 2012. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Thursday, July the 30th, 2015. And Haiti is our focus today. We'll be talking about four key issues that we need to return to and update you on, and in some cases, just to let you know what is happening. But our guest will be Kim Ives, a veteran journalist, editor of Haiti Liberté, a news weekly covering the Haitian community in Haiti, in and in the diaspora. And of course, he is no stranger to us here on Lead Stories. He has been our tour guide, as it were, on Haiti, giving us information that you can't get very many places at all. He has been a documentarian, a prize-winning documentarian, an editor of Haiti Liberté for many years, and we're happy to have him again with us today. So we'll be looking at 100 years of U.S. occupation. We're looking also at Chelsea Clinton's visit to Haiti. We'll be looking at mass deportations of Haitians to the Dominican Republic. And we're looking at the pressure that is mounting against Hillary's personally selected president of Haiti, Michel Martelly. All these things are going to be part of our discussion today, so we have a long and compact program for you. We're hoping to connect very shortly with Kim. He's a little bit, we have not been able to get him get through, so we'll wait for him to be ready. And while we do that, let me also apprise you of a couple of things. One is, I just want to thank you so much for your good wishes and your thoughts and prayers. It's been a fantastic, I'm just floored by it. I really am. But I want to thank you so much for that, because these are the sentiments that are part of my daily arsenal, and they help me do what I have to do. So I thank you so much for all of your good thoughts. Well, I just want to make sure, yes, there we are, we connected, I'm hoping. Are we connected yet? Oh, Okay, we're not. Well, let's do this. I'll keep talking until we get to him. He's not picking up for some reason. I don't understand. We'll take the short break. Let's do this and let's get ourselves together and see if we can get our guest.
Haïti, chéri, pou jamè remè. Mwen vin depose ti kè mwen nan mè. Haïti, chéri, pou jamè adore. Pa gen anè kap jan fè mwen kite. Haïti, chéri, pou jamè remè.
All right, we got you. Kim, you can run, but you can't hide. Are you there? Okay, we're having some difficulty connecting with Kim. Are you there, Kim? All right, we're having some technical difficulty here.
I'm with you now.
Oh, good.
So
I was saying
about that.
You're trying to run, but you can't hide. I don't know why you think you can.
No, we can blame it on the phone companies who's have been injected phones with minds of their own, so they turn off the sound for some reason.
Well, I am so delighted you could join us today. I was saying we have a packed program. We're going to start off talking about 100 years of U.S. occupation being observed in Haiti, and that was just 2 days ago. Could you tell us what the sentiment was, not just in Haiti, but also in the diaspora, how they observed this very, very important historical event?
Well, there were, thank you again, Yatrice, for continuing your coverage of Haiti and its diaspora. The date of July 28th, the 100-year anniversary of the first U.S. Marine occupation, was marked by demonstrations and conferences, both in Haiti and in the States, in New York, where I attended some events for it this past weekend. There was a conference with a lot of intellectuals, Haitian intellectuals, who more or less reviewed in long and large, as they say in Creole, the effects of the UN operation. I should say the nefarious effects of that U.S. Invasion back in 1915, which essentially reinstalled slavery through the corvée system. Basically, peasants were forced at gunpoint to build roads and bridges and canals, rewrote the Haitian Constitution so U.S. corporations could come into the country and buy land and build agribusiness primarily, but also some industries. And essentially put in the presidents and parliamentarians that they wanted. So it left a terrible mark on the population, not only due to the massacres and so forth that happened during it, but to the Haitian national psyche, which had been the first nation of Latin America, as we've discussed often on this show, but was essentially the first invaded as well by the U.S. Of course, there were the U.S. invasions in Puerto Rico and Cuba that preceded it, but those had been theoretically Spanish colonies. This was on a free, independent nation. So there was a very beautiful cultural event on Sunday night, the day following that conference. All this happened at a school in Little Haiti here in Brooklyn. Beautiful songs, singing. A lot of the people who were part of the engaged music scene that grew up in the 70s and 80s during the anti-devaluist uprising in Haiti and its diaspora. And then there was, to cap it off, on July 28th itself, a very interesting meeting at John Jay College in Brooklyn, in Manhattan, with Father Luis Barrios, a well-known activist here in New York, Dominican, Puerto Rican by birth, but has been very involved in the situation in Haiti and the Dominican Republic, where I traveled on a delegation with him a decade ago after the second coup against Aristide, and as well as again a few other academics who spoke and acts that performed. So all in all, I can say it was a sad date, but one that provoked a lot of militant expressions of Haitian nationalism and renewed the calls for the current U.S. occupation of Haiti, which is being done through the auspices of the United Nations, to get out of Haiti, where they still have about 5,000 troops.
Well, interestingly, on that very date, we had the Clinton family business being tended to by Chelsea Clinton, who, along with Donna Shalala, the former president of the University of Miami and now the former president of the Clinton Foundation, paying a very interesting visit to Haiti on that day. And it apparently was lost on them that it was not the best day to arrive.
Yes, you have a way with words. It is very ironic that they chose the 100th anniversary of the first U.S. Occupation. It's sort of very symbolic on a lot of levels. The first U.S. invasion was done essentially to open up Haiti for U.S. investment as an extension of the Monroe Doctrine and the Big Stick policy. It was essentially to take this upstart nation, founded in 1804, and also to tell the Germans and English and French and Spanish to back off. This is our backyard. And so Haiti was, as often is the case, the first one targeted, the example made. Of course, that example was repeated in Nicaragua and Dominican Republic and other places. But back then it was done with rifles and bayonets and Marines. Now it's done through this kind of soft policy with, of course, the world's superpower behind it of the Clinton Foundation. And it's very interesting to see Chelsea Clinton, who seems to be a chip off the old block or both blocks, because she's clearly very intelligent and articulate, but basically defending the same premise. And that premise is the Clinton premise, which is capitalism can save the world. And again, the slogan of the Clinton Global Initiative is you can do well doing good. So that is just invest in the right things, put your capital into the right things, and we'll save the world and we'll make money at the same time. So this is the notion of this two-day junket that Chelsea is now leading, kind of for the first time taking the reins from her father. Of course, she is the deputy chairman or vice president of the Clinton Foundation. So this is interesting in that sense that there also seems to be a torch being passed in the Clinton brand circles.
And it also seems as if, you know, well, not just the torch being passed, which is clear, but it's also that this visit is serving multiple purposes. Number one, Mom happens to be in some deep trouble at the moment, and she has to make up some kind of for the unwarranted, from her perspective, unwarranted concentration on her at the moment with the scandals that she is dealing with, the emails and the environmental issues that she's been flip-flopping on, and any number of other issues, Benghazi among them, that she is going to be dealing with. So what she has been doing on stateside, as it were, this is Mom, Hillary, what Hillary has been doing now is mining the women's vote. And it was interesting that Chelsea Clinton and Donna Shalala, in service of this Clinton Foundation, concentrated the visit, the two-day visit, on Haitian women and Haitian women's initiatives, mm-hmm. economic initiatives, and telling them in a most patronizing way that they should work their way out of illiteracy and seek education and self-sufficiency, as if, you know, the Haitian women have absolutely no idea that this is something that they ought to do and would want to do. But in typical colonial fashion, they show up and they concentrate on women. To your mind, what is the signal here?
Well, I think, yeah, like you say, she's mining the woman's vote, and they're trying to posture as sort of the defenders of women. And, of course, this is key to their whole, the Clinton machine's whole strategy for the 2016 presidential election. And I think Chelsea is very much a part of the team, a part of the brand, going to Haiti. She met with Yves Rosemont-Perrousse of Crayole Essence, which is a sort of perfume and beauty product, natural beauty product producer in Haiti. She's been very vocal and prominent in sort of pushing Haitian investment. But, of course, most of the investment that the Clintons are trying to lure to Haiti are the big corporate investors. I can remember right after the earthquake going to one of the press conferences, which had the head of Coca-Cola and Clinton, and they were talking about this mango drink that they were going to make, that Coke was going to make with Haitian mangoes, et cetera. And this is the kind of thing that the Clintons see themselves as sort of the brokers for, to bring the big corporations into Haiti to, you know, which has remained, unlike the Dominican Republic, with which it shares the island, a kind of outside of the big investment circles. You don't have the big corporations investing as much. Clinton brought in Marriott Hotels after the earthquake, a few things, but you don't see Kentucky Fried and McDonald's and Coca-Cola. I mean, you see Coca-Cola sold, but you don't see them with any sort of real production and so forth in Haiti. So this is what Clinton is. He's the missionary, if you will. He's the guy who's in front, the front man for these corporations. And, of course, then they'll go down, do these junkets with Chelsea. They'll have, you know, a few second-tier Haitian entrepreneurs who will take center stage. But that's the show business. That's the smoke. The real deal is behind the scenes, trying to open up the doors and get the big players in.
But, of course, people are onto the Clintons. Here's an example of Haitians in New York City protesting at Hillary Clinton's headquarters in Brooklyn.
Right.
And calling her out.
There you go.
Where is the money? How much money? $6 billion. Let's talk about the Clinton initiative and the broader scheme, because now her brother is involved. He got one of the few mining contracts to mine gold in Haiti. We have Bill under the ruse of the Clinton Foundation. We have Hillary declaring literally that Haiti is open for business. And now we have Chelsea going down to talk about women and what they ought to do for themselves and pull themselves. The only thing she didn't say was pull yourselves. You have a way of pulling yourselves up by your own bootstraps.
And yeah, Donna, there you go. Yeah, pull yourself up by your bootstrap. I mean, Operation Bootstrap in Puerto Rico. We see the result today where Puerto Rico is so bankrupt. It is the Greece of this hemisphere. And we know the result. I mean, as Luis Barrio said at the meeting at John Jay on July 28th, he said, it's not that capitalism is in crisis. Capitalism is the crisis. And so this is really what the Clintons are, I could say, the pushing, is that they are the first emissaries, we can say, of capitalists among the working class. You know what I mean? If we can say that's what the Democratic Party is in general. It's supposed to posture as sort of this popular people's party, and the Republicans are for the rich and white. But, you know, in fact, they both are. They're linked at the hip or at the heart or at the head, these two parties, this Republicrat Party. So, you know, Bill Clinton plays that role really as the one who dupes the people, or tries to. And, you know, in Haiti, it's very dangerous to do that, because the Haitians will always give you a chance. But, you know, when you betray it, you are going to be the object, the target of their wrath, as that little clip you played shows. And so right now, I could say the straw that broke the camel's back was about 7 months ago, where Bill Clinton, who'd been using his political capital quite a lot since bringing Aristide back to Haiti in 1994, he finally spent the last pennies he had of it when he basically said Laurent Lamothe, the former prime minister under Michel Martelly, the president, who was on the ropes in front of a national uprising. Laurent Lamothe was basically resigning, and Bill Clinton said, oh, that's a big mistake. He's the best guy you ever had. So this just really enraged the people. And I can say ever since then, the demonstrations in front of the Clinton offices, both the Clinton Foundation in Manhattan and Hillary Clinton's office in Brooklyn, have been quite regular.
Could you talk about the context for that that chant about how much money, $6 billion? What are they referring to?
Well, they're referring to the money. In fact, if you count all of it, it's maybe about $13 billion, which was the money that the world channeled to Haiti in after the 2010 earthquake. And Bill Clinton headed what was called the Interim Haitian Recovery Commission, IHRC, with the Prime Minister of Haiti at the time, Jean-Max Bellerive. And essentially, this money was channeled into tourism and sweatshops. They built a big industrial park up in the north of Haiti called Caracol. This was done in conjunction with the Clintons and USAID. This will be one of the things that Hillary will be called out for during the campaign. Then these giant hotels, they built two, one the Oasis, the other the Marriott. You know, these are hotels where you're talking about nightly rooms for, you know, $300, $400, $500. I mean, this is the annual income of most Haitians. So they're just crazy. What are they called? Pink elephants, white elephants. I mean, they're doomed. In a year or two, they'll be out of business. I've heard Oasis is already bankrupt. Because even though Haiti is the NGO capital of the world, but a lot of these aid workers and stuff, I mean, maybe the brass will go and stay at these hotels, but the actual workers won't. So anyway, their notion, it's kind of this supply-side theory. Build the fancy hotels and hotel rooms like you have in the Dominican Republic, and, you know, then the tourists will come. Well, that's not going to happen. It didn't happen under Duvalier, who had the same program, and it's not happening today.
So in a very cynical way, this visit by Chelsea Clinton really is a shill to shield her mother, Hillary Clinton, from to divert attention, as it were, away from the questions that Haitians want answered, and instead do a PR. It's a photo op there,
right.
Chelsea Clinton and Donna Shalala there buying papier-mâché, or paper-mâché as we call them, figurines and bags made by women who clearly got dressed up for the occasion.
Mm-hmm.
And this would be, and the media went along with it. It's just disgusting.
Yeah.
That nobody's asking the obvious questions here. And then we still have the question about the Hillary's brother with his gold mining contract and how that came about. So Haiti actually could be the leverage that could cause a lot of trouble for the Clinton campaign this year, because a lot of the unanswered questions relate to her role in Haiti. Speaking of which, we should talk about the pressure mounting against Hillary Clinton's personally selected president of Haiti. What's going on there?
Yes, well, yes, that's Michel Martelly. One thing I wanted to say before we get to him was simply the role of Haiti and the Clintons. In many ways, the Haitian community and the issue of Haiti contributed a lot to Bill Clinton's original election in 1992. As you recall, at the time, George W. Bush had more or less backed and helped execute the 1991 coup d'etat against Aristide. And Clinton got into office saying that he was going to release the refugees who were being held at Guantanamo. That's where, of course, Guantanamo got started as a holding center. And allow them into the U.S., et cetera. So they went out, and a lot of the African-American community in support as well went out because of the stance of Bill Clinton. And, of course, before he was even inaugurated, he backtracked on that promise and said, no, we're going to keep them at Guantanamo, just a little. So it's ironic that Haiti may end up being their undoing of the Clinton machine as well. But just going back to Martelly, yeah, Martelly seems to have weathered the storms of the winter, basically up until January 12th, when the parliament was dissolved. And right now, elections are about to be held starting on August 9th. It will be the first round of the parliamentary and municipal elections. Essentially, Martelly, who, as you say, Hillary Clinton got put into power, they overruled the Haitian Electoral Council and installed him instead of the actual, or I should say they intervened in between the first and second rounds. So the actual second place a candidate in the first round and ended up being Martelly instead of the one who actually won, a guy called Jude Celestin. So the government of Martelly presently is holding elections, which they dragged their feet on holding for these past 4 years, every seat in the country, from mayors to local community councils, all the way up to the president, is up for grabs. So there's an extremely complicated electoral season that begins on August 9th. There'll be runoffs in the first round of presidentials in October and the last round in December. Are we going to get through all this? It's not going to be easy. It's a recipe, Utrice, it looks to me, for violence, fraud, and the Electoral Council, which has made some very interesting moves, I should say, in the sense that they've knocked out all of Martelly's candidates, as well as those of René Préval, who were both sort of the leading two U.S. Favorites in terms of parties. But at the same time, they've done it in a very clumsy and ham-fisted way. There was really no reason they could knock out Préval's candidate, but they did. Anyway, I think the thing is going to be a mess. A lot of the ones who were knocked out, like Laurent Lamothe, are up to something. They're saying that the whole thing is going to crash and burn. So we see a very tumultuous spall in front of us.
Well, between Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton and their shenanigans in Haiti, I imagine that any political analysis here, I mean, and the media clearly capable of doing it. You've done it and continue to do it to expose these connections. Between Bill and Hillary, we go all the way back to essentially Baby Dot. We have Aristide, the imposition, these folks engineering the politics of Haiti in such a way as to get what they want. So you have Bill Clinton coming in. He knocks out, by the way, the person who was supposed to head up this effort of rebuilding Haiti with the consent, the democratic consent of the Caribbean as a whole, was P.J. Patterson, the former prime minister of Jamaica. He was the person who was going to do this and head it up, with the consent and the approval and the vote and the participation of the entire Caribbean and Latin American region as a whole. Bill Clinton knocks him out, gets him out of the way, and Patterson goes, and then Bill sets up his architecture for massive inflows of money. We hear the Haitian people calling time and again for accountability. Where did this money go? We have no answers, really. We know that many U.S. firms got a lot of contracts, but the actual reconstruction of Haiti has yet to materialize, and Bill Clinton has yet to answer for that. We have the installation, and this is flagrant violation of sovereignty, it seems to me. Here you have a Secretary of State personally installing a president of Haiti, contrary to the democratic exercise of the Haitians themselves. So, I mean, all of these questions are huge, it seems to me, but because it's Haiti, these things don't matter. The media generally turn a blind eye to these things, and they don't call into question the role of the Clintons, and I call them the Bonnie and Clyde of politics. We don't hear this accountability of Clintons at all.
Yeah, correct. And the time when you do hear it, at least in the mainstream, is just in this electoral season, because the right wing is, of course, gunning for them and are picking up on some of these things that the Haitian people and the progressive movement have been saying for a long time about the Clintons. So this is the only time, and unfortunately you see it in venues like the Wall Street Journal and a few. There's this guy, Peter Schweitzer, who just came out with a book on the Clintons. I think it's called something like Clinton Cash. Or,
yes.
And he had quite a few revelations about all the monkey business that the Clintons have been up to in their operations, and how money has been mishandled and basically gone to their friends inside the Beltway, et cetera. So this is, going to be interesting in the sense that we're in the electoral season now, and they're definitely going for this soft underbelly. And I think rolling out Chelsea now, like you say, it's a defensive move, you know, because how can you shoot at Chelsea coming to stand by these Haitian entrepreneurs and their efforts to make a business out of a castor bean oil, you know? It's an interesting battle we see going on.
And also, I think, a way of signaling to Haitians, you know, in that old colonial paternalistic way, I'm here to just see the handiwork that we're doing, trying to improve your lot. Now,
right.
You know, it's good for them. They get great pictures, and the media follow Chelsea around, and they get wonderful pictures of you know, it reminds you of the old colonial days where people would come in and say, well, we've done so much for you, and this is what we are going to want to continue if we have a friendly government. But, you know, it was a way of accomplishing two things at the same time: take the edge off mom here on the mainland and solidify, at least symbolically, some kind of a presence in Haiti.
Right. And I think that the $30 million that they keep touting, the money that has been spent in Haiti and has uplifted however many thousand they were citing of people, there was a very interesting piece in the New York Times about a month ago on a fundraiser which was done in New York on 42nd Street at Cipriani, the fancy hotel kind of right across from Grand Central there. And we learned about it about 2 days before, organized a demonstration outside, which finally got coverage with that article. What was interesting was that the Clinton Foundation got basically $500,000. I think it was that. I don't have the article in front of me. I think it was $500,000 fee for this event, which raised, I think, $1 million. So basically, they got half, something along those lines. So it was really quite outrageous. This was the foundation, Happy Hearts Foundation, of the model, whose name escapes me at the moment, former girlfriend of Sean Penn, Petrova, gave the Clinton Foundation this incredible fee for Bill Clinton being on the dais at this event. So they've really got it down to a system, and it's pretty ugly.
But, you know, well, we'll talk about that another day. One wonders what level of outrage is necessary to really call both Clintons, and now Chelsea is part of it, so she's going to have to answer up as well. But we are clear that primarily it's Bill and Hill. What has to happen for them to really be exposed and to be accountable for the incredible damage that they have caused people?
I think what's being exposed right now, it's a huge machine, and of course a lot of the media, other than the mainstream media, not the progressive media, unfortunately though, even some of the progressive media, have long been, I could say, bewitched and a part of the whole machine. You know, it's interesting. We once had one of our correspondents for Haiti Liberté who went on a junket, which was organized by the Clintons for, I think it was to go see, uh, see the hospital, which was being built up on the Central Plateau, with in conjunction with Paul Farmer, who is, as many may know, Dr. Paul Farmer started Partners in Health and started in Haiti, and he unfortunately has become some sort of a deputy of Clinton and worked closely with him and identified with him. So the correspondent we had wrote this article and edited, we edited it and sent it back to him, and he unfortunately sent it to the Clinton Foundation's press person, and they like axed out the all the critical parts of the of the piece. So, you know, they have this incredible media control, and when we did the WikiLeaks articles, we one of the in Haiti Liberté back in 2011, one of the part of the series we did was looking at how Hillary, as Secretary of State, saying we have to control the narrative. So controlling the narrative, generally speaking, Yatrice, is what the Clintons have you know, become expert at, controlling the narrative. And what needs to happen to break that? Well, I don't know. We need a lot more shows like this to basically puncture a lot of this, you know, happy face balloons that are floating in front of this very ugly backdrop, which involves a lot of, we could say, corruption and lies.
I got to ask you this question as we wrap up this segment and move on. But it occurs to me that one of the things that is working here in the favor of Hillary and Bill, and it really relates to race. They've been misbehaving like crazy in communities of color and nations of color and getting away with it. Is that part of it, that people think in policymaking positions and in media, it's not, you know, Haiti is not a real country. It's just a bunch of black people over there. You know, so we don't really need to be that, you know, concerned about matters of sovereignty and democracy and U.S. imperialism and these things. I mean, Haiti is not even on our radar. So we need not bother either about the country or people misbehaving in their country. So do you get a sense of that? I mean, when you look at it, you see Haiti, you see the African-American community. I mean, Bill Clinton took time out of his campaign for president to go to Arkansas and execute a black man and make it a big deal about how tough on crime that he is. Mm-hmm. I mean, you see that same, you see that, you can't help but see it. That a lot of what they're doing and getting away with literally is taking a toll, an inordinate toll on people of color.
Right. You know, there's an interesting piece in Huffington Post a couple of weeks ago. Bill Clinton is sorry for a lot of things, and it basically outlines a lot of these things that you're speaking of, the, you know, criminal justice, where essentially he helped get so much of the African-American population in jail, the financial deregulation, which, of course, has brought about all the meltdowns economically, the drug war, marriage inequality, don't ask, don't tell, the Rwandan genocide, Haiti rice tariffs. I mean, we remember that, at least we in the Haitian scene remember well the mea culpa he did in front of the Congress, saying this way of promoting dumping of American rice on Haiti destroyed Haitian agriculture. There's so many things that the Clintons have to answer for. And, you know, we just, the essence I think that people have to keep in mind is that in a way, the Obama brand is just a new and improved version of this original Clinton brand, which was, here's the guy who cares about black people, who cares about the poor, who cares about the average man. And now, you know, we're seeing, in a way, maybe the final end game where, it's being slowly picked apart in this season, and we'll see if Hillary crashes and burns from some of these sort of scandals that result from around Haiti. But yes, Haiti has always had this sort of, you know, it has the ultimate bad press. It's always been seen as this sort of basket case country, a mess. You know, they can't do anything right. They can't even rule themselves. So, you know, there's this sort of subtext which has just been beaten into people's minds through repetition over decades that, you know, Haiti is this mess. But, of course, when you get to know the country and you get to understand it, you see that, on the contrary, it's this just vanguard, visionary place where, you know, people end up, you know, paying for that role. And so in some ways, I'm not sure Haiti's image and, I could say, reputation will be improved anytime soon, but I certainly think the Clintons, who have made a lot of hay off of it, their situation is not bright right now.
What is also not bright is the continued deportations and the expected mass deportations from the Dominican Republic of Haitians and people of Haitian ancestry. When last you were on, it was on the cusp, we literally talked about it, on the cusp of this mass deportation when the deadline ended for Haitians to literally document their lineage. How is it going?
Well, right now, it's a kind of confusing because the actual mass deportations have not begun. They're talking about really starting those in August, in the next couple of days. We'll see. Apparently, some have been done. The Haitian ambassador said that a lot of people have been dumped across the border like dogs, was his quote. It is a case where some 20,000 Haitians have fled, have self-deported because of the atmosphere of violence and intimidation that exists in the Dominican Republic. I mean, not just authorities, but sometimes these roving mobs, fascist mobs come and, you know, knock on somebody's door and, you know, haul you out of the house and your furniture and so forth. So in the face of that, a lot of people have chosen to sort of pack up their things on a truck and go across the border. And you have just across the border in Haiti these large camps which are developing. NPR recently did an interesting piece on that. With thousands of people, of families, just waiting kind of for the situation to cool down and see what's going to happen. So in the next couple of days, we could see the actual official deportations begin. But, you know, the essence is the nub of the problem is these Dominicans of Haitian parentage, in this going back to 1929, have very difficult problems to get the papers to prove their lineage. It costs a lot of money. Sometimes they get the papers. It turns out they're no good. I mean, it's a big mess and totally unnecessary because fundamentally Haiti and Dominican Republic were the same country. I mean, the whole island was Haiti at one point for 20 years back at the beginning of the 19th century. Spanish somehow managed to lure back Dominican Republic has the ignominious distinction of being one of the only countries who's gone back into colonial status after being freed. And as Ann Eller, a sociologist from Yale, has recently pointed out, the whole notion and history of this conflict between Haitians and Dominicans is revisionist and false, completely false, and basically built up by the dictator Rafael Trujillo to justify his racist policies. So this is all very unnecessary. They're aping the U.S. policies of immigration, et cetera. I think that unless they back off even more than they have, it's going to spell disaster for this ultra-right wing, which is essentially using this as their battle cry.
Now, just to provide context for the listeners, this mass deportation movement arises out of the law, a law that was passed that said that if you aren't able to establish that you are a Dominican, meaning that somehow you were born or your parents were born or,
parents
in the Dominican Republic,
yeah,
going back to 1929,
right,
if you aren't able to establish that, you cannot claim citizenship in the Dominican Republic, and you will be deported. And we, as we discussed on the program, the process of legalizing these documents and so forth that the government now wants simply didn't even exist for many people, and many people, Haitians of Dominican ancestry. I don't even want to use these words because you're right. I mean, it was one island and people lived on the island, and the patterns of migration didn't have a problem until, why is it now being exercised? Why is it now being enforced?
Yeah, well, you know, this all began a few years ago when a young woman, Juliana de Guise-Pierre, who was born in Dominican Republic in Los Jovilos, went with her Dominican birth certificate to the Central Election Board in 2008 to get a voter ID card. And the board confiscated her birth certificate then because she had two Haitian last names. So then the ruling went to the Dominican Constitutional Court, and in September 2013, they made that ruling, which said that Juliana had been wrongly registered at Dominican as Dominican at birth, even though she was born in Dominican Republic, because her parents were undocumented. Her parents were undocumented. And this is the essence of the problem, is that if you're going to judge people by your parents, you know, going back to 1929, and, you know, one other thing, Eutrice, I think the reason they go back to 1929 is because Rafael Trujillo, the famous dictator, the Somoza, the Duvalier of Haiti, came into power in 1930, and they want to make it look like it goes back to 1929. So this is the irony that we're facing, is that a lot of Dominicans are now becoming essentially stateless. They are, they've never been to Haiti, but they don't, they might not even speak Creole. They speak Spanish. They don't know Haiti, but they are essentially having their citizenship stripped. And if we want a parallel, let's go back to Nazi Germany in July of 1933, when they stripped citizenship from Eastern European Jews living in Germany, many for decades, and we know the aftermath of that, what that was the beginning of. So it's not too much to say that this can result in practically a Holocaust. In the case of Haitians, this has already happened. In 1937, Trujillo killed thousands of Haitians in the DR, and the memory of this is still fresh in people's minds 78 years later.
So could you tell me just pretty quickly what the impact is? How huge an impact is this going to have within the Haitian community of the Dominican Republic? How many people could this possibly affect?
Well, this can affect about 250,000, 244,000. I mean, it's difficult to know because the number of Haitians and children of Haitians in Dominican Republic is not clear, but it looks like it's about 244,000, the best figure that I've seen. So these are, you know, some number of that, about half, they're now saying, have managed to get their documents according to the new laws, and there are there is talk of making it easier. So I think the U.S. is seeing that they're in a way playing the good cop, if you will, in this. They're seeing that, okay, this situation could start to become counterproductive and affect business and investment and so forth. So I think they're trying to get the hardliners to sort of back off a little bit and, you know, tone it down, cool it, but, you know, aren't denouncing it in any clear way. So we'll see where it goes in the next couple of weeks, but for sure the situation continues. And, you know, I think that at the very least, the 20,000 or so people who have been forced out so far are just the beginning of migration, which is going to be both voluntary and involuntary. Well, it's all involuntary, but, you know, some people are self-deporting. And in this coming month of August, I think we're going to start to see the Dominicans taking the people in trucks and dumping them across the border.
Well, thank you so much, Kim, for being with us today. And it's always an education talking to you because you have a great way, because you understand the history of Haiti. You're not just talking from, you know, just one dimension. You are integrating all of this information and making it accessible to us all. So thank you so much for being our guided tour today.
Well, thank you very much, Utrice, for offering me the venue.
Thanks again. So we'll talk again real soon as we follow the developments on the deportation question. Thanks again for being with us today.
Okay, so long.
That brings us to the end of the program. I hope it was insightful and instructive and certainly allowed us to connect the dots. I keep saying to you, nothing happens in a vacuum. And we do have connections. So here you have two people, Donna Shalala and Chelsea Clinton, just making a two-day visit to Haiti. Is it just a visit? No, it's not. And that's why we have to start connecting things, because we literally are all connected. Stay tuned. Coming up next is Expanding Mind with Eric Davis. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com with your comments and questions. And of course, tomorrow, being Friday, it's time to free your mind. So we'll pick up the conversation again tomorrow. And I'm so delighted to be with you today. And I'm happy that you can join me in the conversation, in this conversation with Kim Ives. I thank you, as always, for the pleasure and privilege of your company, and I urge you to tell everybody you know about PRN.FM and about this program, Lead Stories, on PRN.FM. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye. Kajan fè mwen kite ou Haiti chéri pou jan.